This is Andrew Kate.
And this is Ryan Capuano.
And welcome to another edition of the Death of Cinema podcast. In today's episode, Tom Cruise depresses the masses with The Mummy and It Comes at Night.
Ooh, and we begin with It Comes at Night. And I'm sorry to be a dick in that little intro because the film is actually very, very good. It's another, I think this is just another entry in the long line of really thoughtful art house horror films that have been coming out over the past 10 years or so. And, you know, in the vein of The Babadook, It Follows, etc., The Witch. It's really just incredible, like the sense of dread that is built up in every single frame. And even if it's just, you know, Joel Egerton giving kind of like a side-eye glance, it's just... I don't even really want to reveal too much of the plot of this, just because I feel it's something that should unfurl for you. But it's basically what would happen if, well, I guess if you give someone a little bit more thoughtful, the script, a loose story of The Walking Dead, and then told them to actually do something with it for once. And I think this is pretty much where you end up. And that's not to say this is a zombie film, but it definitely is a some kind of vague post-apocalyptic survival film. And I just think that, you know, Andrew, I'm just going to turn this over to you. I'm still a little shell-shocked from it, to be honest.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the whole art house horror thing, because that was one of my big takeaways from it. This is just sort of the latest example of this great string of art house horror. As you mentioned, The Babadook, The Witch, It Follows, stuff like that. I even recently watched a film just the other night called The Black Coat's Daughter. Directed by Oz Perkins, son of Anthony Perkins, obviously the original Norman Bates in Hitchcock's Psycho. And It Comes Tonight is definitely, you know, definitely delivers what it sets out to do. The film certainly isn't the kind of thing that mainstream audiences will embrace or are embracing. But I definitely am embracing it, as I'm definitely a big part of the core audience for this film. And, you know, my big takeaways from it are the direction from Trey Edward Schultz. I've been meaning to watch his previous film, Krisha, or however you say it.
I think that's right.
And his direction on this is just extremely confident. The film is sort of deceptively simple, is what I'd say. And it doesn't do a lot of explaining exactly what is happening, but it's all the better for it. And through the direction, we sort of feel every moment, and the tension really is unbelievable until it sort of explodes in the third act. And one of the reasons I'm such a big fan of art house horror is the filmmakers are actually concerned with atmosphere and building to something. They're not just throwing jump scares at you left and right. And sort of what you said, this isn't a horror film in the traditional sense. It's definitely more of that art house variety. There isn't some sort of big bad villain or anything like that. It's more about these characters we follow and the tension in the atmosphere as it builds and then eventually spirals out of control. And Joel Edgerton is really good, sort of as the lead in this film, as sort of... I mean, it's hard to say he is the lead, because it's sort of like, you know, his family unit as the lead, and particularly his son may be more considered the lead. But there's just some really, not only great performances, but really striking imagery of the film, and the cinematography direction. Just pretty much everything is sort of working towards creating this atmosphere and this tension, and I think it really is successful using those things.
Yeah, definitely. This is, like you were saying, it kind of, I appreciate that there are a lot better directors who are tackling the genre and kind of reviving it over the past 10 years or so. And it kind of, you know, it's a throwback to the horror films of the 60s and the 70s of, you know, your Suspirias and your Repulsions, that kind of thing. And this is most certainly just a character-based film that happens to be, you know, have a horror thriller backdrop. And like you were saying, Schultz has this incredible sense of style, and it's almost unfair that he's already this good of a filmmaker and he's not even 30 years old yet. Even like little tiny things, like there was a shifting aspect ratio throughout the film that kind of signifies what might kind of sort of be a dream sequence. Is it or is it not? Or is this something else? And I think that's used brought back really effectively towards the end of the film when we get kind of our final denouement on this little story. For those of you who don't really know what that means, it's kind of like, think of it as an IMAX film when the whole thing fills up the screen. Well, in this, the frame actually gets wider than it is for most of the movie, and it's almost like this disorienting thing to see it kind of projected in that way through that lens. That's a little bit technically geeky, but it just kind of, it throws you off, and the sound design is like really wonderful. There's always like this constant background noise. I sat actually towards the back of the theater, which I rarely do, and I was glad because I was actually able to hear some of the surround work. And it's just the whole idea is building up the sense of where are the monsters actually coming from, and there is not a spoilt frame of this entire film.
Yeah, I mean, sort of getting, I mean, what's interesting is, you know, I kind of feel like I'm taking a hit as a film professor because I didn't even, maybe I was just so into the film that I didn't even notice these changing aspect ratios and all that stuff. But I did want to go back to what you mentioned about this being a character film, as I think some of the strongest scenes in this film are the simple character scenes where Joel Edgerton is paired with another character and he's sort of trying to figure out their true intentions in this post-apocalyptic world. And sort of getting back to what I mentioned about being deceptively simple, like all these scenes, they function sort of like on the surface level, you may not think there is much going on, but there is so much just due to the direction, the sound design, the cinematography, everything is working towards making the audience feel that something is off. And it's meant to be up to the audience to figure out whether something is actually off or if it's in the characters' minds that something is off. And that is one of the major successes of this film and something I just completely love about it. It's having that sort of tension and that uneasiness that takes you to these clearly dark places. This film certainly is not a crowd pleaser. I certainly wouldn't say that. But it takes you to some really dark places, and I think you're willing to go because of those simple character moments.
Right, this film has a, I'm not going to give too much away, but let's just say I felt like it earned its ending. It is most certainly different than the, you know, more recent entries, just because it is different and there is no overt, you know, monster chasing everyone throughout. It's just very, very subtle in the way everything works, and I think this is something that could have very easily gotten well out of hand very quickly, or, you know, something that could have even become, like, incredibly histrionic or over the top. But I think in Schultz's hands, he really knew immediately what he was going for, what kind of movie he was going to make, and he really did not concern himself with anything other than getting to the, like, the final 5 minutes of this film. And the build-up to that is just unbelievable. And the final... Oh, God, it's still... back to you.
Yeah.
I can't. I'm sorry. It's just hard.
I definitely know how you feel in terms of that third act. It's hard to... I mean, obviously, as Ryan said, we don't want to spoil anything, especially with a film like this. And so it's hard to talk about sort of without getting into it. But all I'll say is, you know, all of that tension sort of explodes in the third act, and the emotions that the characters have been feeling throughout the entire film finally come to the forefront and really come out in unexpected ways, to say the least. And I think, you know, sort of one of the problems that I think a lot of mainstream audiences have had with these art house horror films is that, you know, they leave a lot of questions unanswered. And that is one of the things that I love about these films. You know, they don't concern themselves with spelling everything out for you. It's really about how it makes you feel, the tension, the atmosphere, how it really makes you, an audience member, feel, and how it sort of takes you through these ups and downs over the course of the film. In the case of this film, mostly downs, but it does so just beautifully. And it's easily, I think, one of the best films of the year by far so far, just being halfway through the year, just about.
Yeah, definitely. I think the summer has been certainly challenging for me, just because there's just been so much schlock out there. So it was really good to, and, you know, obviously I had my reservations about Wonder Woman, but it felt good to, like, walk out of something that was, like, this strong in a summer that just seems to be constantly clobbering us over the head with the same shit over and over again. Said shit we will be getting to momentarily, but was there anything else you wanted to wrap up with regarding this film?
Not specifically. I just think it's a film, as I said, it's certainly not for a lot of mainstream audiences, as we can see from the reception from different audiences, but I just don't think they're prepared to feel these things. And honestly, I love a film like this because it is relevant in today's world, you know, and the dark elements of, you know, our current society, you know. And I feel like, you know, that is what great horror did back in the 60s and 70s and 80s and stuff like that, you know. And it's great that there's so many of these high quality filmmakers that are getting back to that essence. And I can't wait to see what more this sort of art house horror subgenre delivers us. But now we can sort of turn our attention to our other film we're going to be discussing today. Alex Kurtzman's The Mummy. And basically, I'm going to start off, I have this little spiel I'm going to start off with. Alex Kurtzman's The Mummy is what happens when studio executives get greedy and think, hey, a cinematic universe with classic Universal movie monsters. What could possibly go wrong? Well, the answer to that question is mostly everything. Tom Cruise stars as generic action man, with none of his trademark movie star charisma on display to save this turd. As is the case with a number, typically as is the case with a number of his blockbusters, he usually saves it with his charisma, not the case here. Jake Johnson co-stars in a role that will hopefully earn him a Razzie nomination, if for no other reason than he's unbearably annoying for even just a few minutes he's on screen. So that should pretty much tell you, in general, my thoughts on the Mummy. Ryan, your initial thoughts on The Mummy.
Within 5 minutes, I leaned over to my wife and said, Jesus Christ, this is really embarrassing to watch. It's just every single decision in this movie was the wrong one. From this really, first of all, the movie has like this really cynical, slimy feel that, in much like Pirates of the Caribbean, that like, oh, audiences are going to love this. Everyone fucking loves the universe. That's really not the case when with a, like, all right. So basically the first 5 minutes is explaining the entire backstory of the film, kind of like the Brendan Fraser one. And we'll be comparing this randomly to the Brendan Fraser entries throughout, for good reasons, too, because they're far fucking better movies. But they also go on to explain the plot like two or three more times throughout the film. And it's just so much clunky exposition. First of all, that fucking bogs the movie down. And it feels like there's literally nothing that happens in this entire film. There's this really, like, it's really weird how they kind of frame it. It just seemed the action set pieces were just random ideas that had no connective tissue between them. There was nothing loosely thrown together. I think it was actually kind of weird they brought in, you know, that the movie takes place in Iraq, even though it's a mummy, and it just felt like it was something kind of weird to kind of get them into. I don't know. It just felt weird. Russell Crowe as Dr. Jekyll is fucking atrocious. I think that there's like this little scene when he's like kind of doing like his back and forth transformation thing, and he lets out like this little, almost like, I think it's supposed to be like a maniacal laugh, but it just sounds like a kind of like, wish I was dead laugh. Tom Cruise, as Andrew mentioned, is just like completely vapid in this film. It saps away anything that would have made it even remotely interesting if it was a Tom Cruise vehicle per se. I think the CGI is terrible. I think, you know, there's like this dark overcast gray thing that was very clearly done to hide how bad the CGI was. There are a bunch of like these random CGI blobs just screeching at Tom Cruise for no reason. The female character, I'm sorry to monopolize this, but the female character is something else I wanted to really touch on, because she's supposed to be like this rough and tumble archaeologist type. But of course, she's absolutely nothing but a fucking info dump once again in this film. And she has, and Tom Cruise is basically like this scoundrel type, which is admittedly against type for him. But that also goes to show that you could have dumped any actor in there and gotten the same exact performance. In this case, it's like, you know, Tom Cruise is trying to swindle her basically out of her life's work and find this mummy before she does and sell it off on the black market, whatever. So throughout the entire film, it's also reiterated multiple times that Tom Cruise has nothing but disdain for this poor woman. And then at the very end, for some reason, they start falling in love. I didn't get that for a second. I think it was pretty much just an excuse to get the actress in a white t-shirt in the water at the end. But that's more or less what my initial reaction was. I'm sure more will percolate over the course of the next 10 minutes, though.
And getting to the essence of this movie and that fact that the film stars Tom Cruise, you know, I unabashedly love Tom Cruise as an actor.
Who doesn't?
I should say that. And this is easily in contention for the worst film of his career, as he's an actor who actually has made a lot of consistently good decisions. There's certainly a handful of films that aren't very good, but typically in those films, there's at least some essence of that charisma. As I mentioned sort of in my opening, as you allude to, there's none of that on display here. And the film is definitely bad. I was actually hoping for it to be even worse and to be spectacularly bad, so it became something entertaining in some way. Instead, it's just sort of there on the screen with this constant info dump of exposition existing for no one except these foreign markets, which have somehow made this film, I believe, the biggest international opening of Tom Cruise's career, which is might be the saddest sentence I've ever stated in my life. The fact that this film, The Mummy, is the biggest international opening of Tom Cruise's career, it's just sad. Like, how is that possible? I mean, it's just so clear, as you sort of mentioned with that exposition, it's just so clear that this film is not made for a North American audience. It's made for foreign markets, and that's why they're having all of these, everything is exposition in these films. There's nothing to the characters. There's nothing there in the story. There's nothing to cling on to. There's no characters that are memorable. There's nothing to cling on to other than, oh, we're just going to repeat what's going on in the story over and over again, so we make sure these non-English speaking foreign markets can understand everything. I mean, it's just really pathetic. And sort of getting back to Russell Crowe's appearance in this film, I think as Dr. Jekyll, he's okay. The worst part is when he turns into Mr. Hyde. And just, I mean, when I saw his appearance in Mr. Hyde, I just went, yeesh, this is like, what are you doing? This is like something they would put in, like, you know, just a terrible film produced by Akiva Goldsman or something. In fact, I even went through the credits and looked to see if Akiva Goldsman had anything to do with this. If those of you that don't know, he's known for writing and producing some terrible films like Batman and Robin.
Beautiful Mind.
Winter's Tale recently. Like, the guy is just a terrible, terrible writer, producer, etc. But unfortunately, he wasn't involved in this. But still, I'm just going to criticize him anyway, because, you know, it just seems like a decision he would make. I also want to bring up the director of this film, Alex Kurtzman, and I just want to say and state for the record, fuck Alex Kurtzman. Who the hell thought this guy, the man responsible for the scripts of the Transformers films, clearly a writing genius because of that fact, could helm a blockbuster? Probably the executives will feel like it'd be so easy to control, because it certainly wasn't because he had a great vision for this film, because there's no vision whatsoever. It's like this was helmed by a freaking student filmmaker. There's nothing there. Like, there's nothing interesting about how it's shot. There's no characters there. It's just so just paper thin. I just keep coming back to this. The fact that the film is so paper thin and there's nothing there to cling on to. That's why it's just like watching it. It's just like, why was this movie made? Why does it exist? Well, I'll tell you why it was made. It was not only made for the foreign markets, it was made because this is meant to be the start of Universal's dark universe, because every film studio needs a dark universe now. And this is something that's sort of been bouncing around in my head for a while now. But, you know, when I initially heard that Universal was gonna make this movie Monster Universe, there was a part of me that was sort of like, oh, well, it could be really interesting if they harken back to the classic Universal monster films like Frankenstein, The Mummy, Invisible Man, etc. And they are going to be making a series of these films, but obviously they're taking a tact of making it these action horror mashups. And I'll be honest, I still don't understand who the audience is for these action horror mashups. I just don't get it. These things don't appeal to me. Underworld, who gives a fuck? Like, who are these movies made for? Not me, clearly, and I guess there are audiences out there that enjoy this stuff, but, I mean, it's sort of, you know, by making an action horror film, just by staying that sentence, you're sort of putting together two opposing things. As we talked about with It Comes at Night, horror films should be, about atmosphere and tension and building up to these scary moments and making the audience feel every moment. By making an actual horror film, you're basically taking the pace and making it fast, and therefore there's no scary elements, there's no actual horror elements, but they're just going to slap it on there and say, oh, this, someone needs this. You know, they're trying to appeal to, I guess, as wide an audience as possible, when in reality, they're appealing to no one. Well, I shouldn't say no one, because the foreign markets are clearly spending money on this piece of trash. But, you know, what are you going to do? I'm just so frustrated right now. Fuck this movie.
Well, we'll see how it does in its second week. Hopefully it just falls off the map, because I know that's, you know, famous last words, and we're probably going to be seeing about five more of these, regardless of whether or not it does well in America. It's like you said, action horror is a very, very fine line to balance. I think the only films off the top of my head that I liked that kind of fall into that ballpark are maybe the first two Blade movies, which are entertaining in their own right. And then you have pretty much the Brendan Fraser Mummy. And that's really where it begins and ends. So we could continue shitting on this film, but I also feel like we'd be remiss to not at least draw comparisons to that first 1999 film, just to see why that worked in lieu of this mashup. Why does one action adventure horror? All right, so I think I might have just added the key word in there. Adventure is part of it. There is no sense of adventure. These are a bunch of fucking people in the lab just sitting around talking, and then this weird. And also, I don't think that the mummy needed to be female. I think that was just an excuse to get an actress naked on camera. But I just, like you said, there's no attention to any of it. with the first Mummy, there was also a healthy sense of camp that what we were watching on screen is inherently goofy, and that's part of what was fun about it. You're in on the joke, and very clearly everyone else on screen was too. But, and you know, God bless him and God bless the movie, but I think The Dark Knight might have been the worst thing that's ever happened to movies, just because everything is fucking gritty now. There's no reason we should have, like, gritty Ninja Turtle movies, you know? And I think this is part of that trap that that's falling into. And I know that, you know, the Marvel movies might not be as dark as some of the other action films out there, but they also still have that, like, harsh grittiness to them. And I feel like not every movie has to be super dark. This is a fucking movie about a mummy coming to life. What, can we have at least a little bit of tongue-in-cheek about that?
Well, I will say you brought up the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles films, and I take it you haven't seen those films because
no.
They're not dark at all. Well, like, but they're still awful. They're still. But I know what you mean. I know what you're saying by doing it. It's trying to take that formula and apply it to the Ninja Turtles, and it just completely doesn't work. But you brought up the word adventure, and that is something I wanted to bring up because the ending to this film, and I'm not gonna say exactly what happens, but the ending is laughably hokey, and just sort of setting up further adventures, although calling them adventures would be an insult to the word. Because you know, I mean, they're clearly setting up, oh, Tom Cruise, he's gonna cross over with these other films. The Invisible Man, I think it's supposed to star Johnny Depp, and then they're making a Javier Bardem film. I'm not even sure which character he's meant to be playing. I think he might be playing Frankenstein's monster. You know, it's just like it's clear that they're trying to set up once again one of these other cinematic universes and trying to give us a sense of adventure, especially particularly at the end. And it's just like, you didn't earn this. You didn't earn anything. It was just like, what are they doing? It like they're just trying to, you know, take this, you know, what Marvel has done with their cinematic universe and trying to apply it to anything. And you can't just apply it to any type of movie and expect it to work. And you also can't hire terrible hack filmmakers to direct your big blockbusters and expect it to be good. I'm sorry, but Alex Kurtzman, as far as I'm concerned, should never direct another film. And no doubt he will, because I'm sure he's just a yes man who will do whatever the studio executives say, because I can't see any other reason for him writing these terrible pieces of trash and directing this piece of crap. I mean, the guy is just, I mean, clearly doesn't know what he's doing, and Universal clearly doesn't know what they're doing. They just had, you know, dollar signs in their head and were like, oh, we're going to create this dark universe without thinking about, you know, actually making a quality film in the first place. And, you know, I mean, I will say that there is some slight hope, I guess, for the Dark Universe. And I say that with much skepticism. And the only reason I say that is because apparently Bill Condon is going to be directing The Bride of Frankenstein. And that could be something interesting. I think it's going to be really tough. I mean, it's hard to know what direction they're going to go with it, because obviously the original The Bride of Frankenstein is an absolute classic of the sort of classic horror genre. And I don't know, it's hard to know, like, a filmmaker like Bill Condon, you wouldn't expect him to make something in the vein of this Mummy film, that's for sure. But, you know, it's hard to be hopeful when you clearly got these Universal executives who have no clue what they're doing. So maybe Bill Condon can save it, although I don't know why they're making The Bride of Frankenstein before Frankenstein itself. I don't know. I don't know exactly what they're doing here. But clearly the filmmakers didn't either, and the evidence is on the screen throughout this film.
That could have been something even as simple as a scheduling error, which just goes to show how little they actually give a fuck about whether or not this is any good. This is just a cash grab, pure and simple. And Bill Condon does give me hope, but it also seems a bit on the nose considering he directed Gods and Monsters as well, which is a film that I admire greatly. And I almost feel bad that he kind of got roped into all this bullshit. And Alex Kurtzman, he did the Star Trek movies with his nutso partner Robert Orci, right?
Yes, but obviously, you know, those scripts can be saved by a filmmaker, yes, who actually has a vision. This clearly was the case, or at least with the first Star Trek film, mm-hmm, directed by J.J. Abrams. But, you know, clearly Alex Kurtzman cannot save his own terrible writing. I'm assuming he co-wrote this film, although who knows? Whoever wrote this film, fuck them as well.
Well, that's the thing. I want to ask you, I don't know if you happen to stick around long enough to watch any of the credits, but I noticed two interesting names, and one of them was Christopher McQuarrie, who is actually a really talented guy and an Academy Award winner for The Usual Suspects. I'm assuming that he was brought on mostly to rework the dialogue to sound like it's kind of a Tom Cruise vehicle. That's my only guess, and I'm pretty sure the other one, was it David Kep, I think was the other name?
What, yeah, a shock.
I know. So, yeah, that might not be shocking, but it's on. I don't know about that guy. I just really don't. He's so fucking up and down. It just makes me nauseous. But this whole thing, I just, yeah, when I saw Christopher McQuarrie's name, it did kind of give me hope. And I saw it on IMDb first, but I just, everything about this just feels like a hodgepodge of studio ideas, and this is the same failings as, but this is basically the same criticisms I've had about like the past 4 weeks of the big blockbuster movies that we've talked about, with the exception of maybe Alien, just because I know that that was at least a sincere effort. But with this, there's just something really, really smarmy about it, and I really just, I in my 31 years on this planet have never walked out of a movie. I'm reaching my fucking wit's end now with this shit.
Yeah, no, and getting back to your point about Christopher McQuarrie sort of working on the script for this, you're definitely right. You definitely have to be right on it, trying to make this feel like a Tom Cruise movie. For those of you that don't know, obviously Christopher McQuarrie and Tom Cruise have a good relationship in terms of films. Obviously, Christopher McQuarrie directed the last Mission Impossible, and I believe he's directing the next one as well. And he also worked on the Jack Reacher films as well, films that actually utilize Tom Cruise's charisma above anything else. But it's clear, sort of getting back to that, you know, as I mentioned, you know, a bad script can be saved by a filmmaker with a vision. You know, here, a good writer cannot save a script that is directed by someone who has no clue what they're doing. And that's clearly the case here. The Mummy is depressing, an indictment on the current blockbuster culture, as there is. I mean, really. I mean, I think it is definitely up there with King Arthur and Pirates as far as the worst films of the year, for sure. And I guess we'll see what happens with the Dark Universe. I have a feeling they're just going to push through sort of like what DC did and hope for, you know, to turn out one quality film that will hopefully get people invested in the future of this franchise. But honestly, I can only imagine how much money they threw at Tom Cruise, Johnny Depp, Javier Bardem to be a part of some of these films. Well, I can certainly understand why Javier Bardem would be a part of a Bill Condon film, but, you know, some of these elements, there's just no explaining to the reasons and the decisions for making this film, other than they were greedy, they want their own cinematic universe, and Universal is going to do whatever they can to get that foreign market money. And unfortunately, it leaves us in North America with a heaping pile of crap that sits on the screen for less than 2 hours, but really, I mean, what does it matter when a film is this paper thin?
You know, I think we've pretty much extolled the virtues of this film as far as we can go, but I just wanted to bring up an interesting point that I didn't realize this until last night, that this film was actually meant to be the second in the franchise. And the first film in the franchise, this was quickly abandoned, and you're shaking your head, yes, Dracula Untold. I didn't even bother seeing this. I didn't even know that was supposed to be a franchise starter. I don't think anyone else did, clearly. I know, it's laughable now, just because, like, I'm sure it's probably on par with how bad this film is, but it's probably a lot more boring just because there's not, at least, you know, Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise. I mean, shitty Tom Cruise performance, it's still Tom Cruise, at least, but it just kind of speaks to that. And, like, what the fuck plans did they have in the beginning, if that was what they thought was gonna like ignite this fire, you know what I mean?
Exactly. It gets back to my point about these action horror mashups. Like, who is the audience for this? It feels like a very specific audience. Doesn't feel like these types of movies are going to appeal to as wide an audience as possible, at least here in North America. And it's just, I mean, just terrible to see. You know, it's clearly that these executives saw what the DC executives saw, and they just didn't really think it through and come up with quality characters and an interesting adventure story before jumping into the deep end of the cinematic universes. And it's just really, really depressing to even think about. But yeah, The Mummy sucks.
It does. And I think DC is basically just proving to other studios that they essentially have, as long as they have something that resembles a franchise or a universe, that they just have a license to print money at this point. And I think, and going back to, I remember reading something about the Malaysian translation for Avengers Age of Ultron, just like pretty much had to change the entire story just because the translation made absolutely no sense. So to that extent, the fact that, you know, this very clearly does feel like it was made to capitalize at an international box office makes sense that this movie does not. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you unfortunately know exactly what you mean. But sort of to wrap up our episode here, you know, I definitely recommend It Comes Tonight, and I certainly do not recommend The Mummy. And we'll be back next week with a review of Cars 3, and we still haven't decided on the second film because there is so much quality of filmmaking out there at the box office currently that it's hard to know where to start.
I want to see the Colin Trevorrow family comedy where the little kid gets molested.
Well, I guess that is probably going to be our second option next week. And we can only, you know, hope that, you know, we're able to sit through it like we unfortunately had to sit through the movie.
Thank you for indulging on this once again, and we'll see you next week.